This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. Monday always means EJ Raddick from NHL Now, and he's on the road. He joins us from St. Louis, site of Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Final, in which Boston has a 2-1 edge. How are you, man?
I'm great. Looking forward to Game 4 tonight, a critical contest in the series. I mean, Boston could grab the proverbial stranglehold with a win. And obviously, if St. Louis can get their game back in track, get this thing tied up and make it a 2 out of 3. So tonight is definitely a turning point for sure.
Well, you look at the playoffs, Binnington is 12-2 after losses, right?
Yep.
Which is kind of, when you look at that stat, you realize that that's a lot of losses to bounce back from, right? I mean, it's kind of alternating wins and losses. That's kind of what the Blues have been doing all playoffs long, and I guess the feeling is that there's no panic around them because they've been there and they've done that. They bounce back after a tough game one loss to win game two. So I wouldn't think there's any panic in that room because of that.
No, I don't think so either. I think, I think they did, they did get shaken up a little bit the other night. Now, they can say what they want, and they have been really good. I mean, especially after game one, they bounced back really well. They were like, yeah, we knew what we did wrong, and we have to adjust to it, and we made some adjustments, and their forecheck game was way better in game two, and they ended up winning in overtime. But what happened the other night with St. Louis's power, or should be Boston's power play being so dynamic? I mean, 4 goals on 4 shots in the game, and St. Louis was never able to generate long stretches of that offensive zone time. So, I think for me, in these series, Don, playoff series over the years, I've seen enough of them. It's always about you make an adjustment, I make an adjustment, right, back and forth until you see if you're out of moves. It's almost like a chess game. And I do wonder at this point, like St. Louis is making some moves tonight. They're leaving Zach Sanford in the game. He's going to move up to the O'Reilly-Perron line. They're taking Zemi Blais, moving him into the Robbie Fabry/Robert Thomas spot on that third line with Bozak and Maroon. And then Sundqvist comes back in the game tonight, and he centers again that fourth line with Steen and with Barbashev. And then Vince Dunn is coming back in, and he's sliding in for Bertuzzo. So, they're making some adjustments to the lineup. But, when you do these things now in game four, is that going to be enough? Are they going to be able to stem the tide of the Bruins? Are they going to be able to get to a physical game without taking penalties? And if they do take penalties, will they be able to kill those penalties?
Right.
So I think Boston made some key little adjustments in game three, and I just wonder if St. Louis has another move that will counteract what Boston did. That's what I'll be looking for tonight. And I'm not so sure they did.
Yeah, you do make a great point because it is 7-2. It is 4-for-4 on the power play for Boston. It's not your typical loss. And it's easy to say, well, just don't take any penalties, but it's going to happen, right? I mean, they're going to take a penalty or two. It's just how often do you see in a playoff game where a team does not take a penalty? And because the Boston, who's been the best power play unit the entire playoffs, and went 4-for-4, as you said, on 4 shots, the next shorthanded opportunity, I would think, is going to be firmly planted in the Blues' head, and that's going to be a tough one to have to probably battle through, because you're not going to know if you're going to be able to kill it.
Yeah, I mean, here's the numbers. I mean, Boston Bruins power play on the road in the playoffs, 28 chances, 14 goals. That's 50% success on the road in the playoffs over the three previous series and the first three games of this one. I mean, that is production. I mean, you just don't see that often. And the funny thing is, in 2011, when the Bruins went on to win the Stanley Cup, their power play was putrid.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, it was terrible. It was terrible. And they managed to win without it. This year, they've been thriving on the power play. I'll go back to something that we talked about, and it was a big talking point for me coming into this series, is I thought it's how the games are called. The St. Louis-San Jose series, I felt they let the Blues play a little on the edge more, and there were not as many penalties against the Blues that could have been called. There was some that easily could have been called. Tarasenko, cross-check Meyer right in the face, right between the benches in game number 6, I believe it was. There was the couple of plays in game 5 where I think Hurdle got hit in the head by Barbashev. There was a couple of plays like that throughout the series that went unpenalized. And I felt like if the referees were going to continue to call the game kind of loose and let the players play, that would really benefit the Blues. what's happened in this series is the referees have called the games tighter, and that's resulted in 14 power play opportunities for the Boston Bruins in three games, and they scored on six of them. So, and they really made a couple of really smart adjustments in game three that I think helped that power play really thrive in that game. So, again, we look to that tonight. How are the officials going to call it? Can the Blues stay inside the lines a little bit more physically? And if they don't, will the referees be there to raise their arm and call penalties? So that is a really critical thing for me in this series. As you know, Johnny, you call games, you watch games for a long time. Sometimes the officials allow more to happen in a game. Sometimes they don't.
I know.
And, if they allow more to happen, that benefits the Blues. If they allow less to happen, I believe that benefits the Bruins.
But I think St. Louis has to ignore that, as difficult as that is to do. And when they out-hit their opponent, they seem to win. That's what won that San Jose series. That's what won Game 2. You know, they can't be timid about it. You know, if you're going to all of a sudden try to say, well, we're going to play less physical because we want to stay out of the box, then I think that's playing in the Boston's hands. So
I agree with you, and I think that's the dilemma that the St. Louis Blues are faced with right now. Now, not all these penalties have been penalties of overly physical aggression. I mean, the other night in Game 3, the first penalty of the game was David Perron kind of like leapfrogging on the back of a Boston player coming up the ice and taking away space. It was a clear interference penalty, and it was called. So, you know, they've got to clean those things up. I mean, it's one thing to take a penalty for a really hard hit on a player that maybe goes over the line. It's another thing to take a hooking penalty or an interference penalty in the neutral zone. So that's the stuff they really have to try to clean up.
All right, we're talking to E.J. Raddick. Of course, Game 4 tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern time. Is now it shifts solely to NBC the rest of the way. So just hoping for a long series and have some fun. But how has St. Louis embraced this thing? I mean, trying to get a sense on television, watching it, that the place was really excited. First Stanley Cup final game there since May 5th of 1970. I mean, how has St. Louis really embraced this team in this final?
I mean, the city was pretty excited about that game three, and unfortunately it just got away from them. I mean, the mm-hmm. fact that game was 3-0 after one and then 4-0 early in the second period, I mean, it was a dud. I don't know how else to say it. I mean, if you're a Blues fan, you're revved up. I mean, you're excited about, you just won an overtime in game two, and you're feeling like, hey, this could be our year. They play the pump-up videos kind of before the game. They had all the Blues captains kind of weighing in. The crowd was really revved up. You got a power play in the first minute and a half minute of the game. And I thought that was one of those things, Donnie, that really worked against the St. Louis Blues as well. When, you know, that circumstance, the crowd is revved up. The Blues are a four-line team. They want to play physical. They want to establish their forecheck. I think Craig Berube, listen, you always want to have a power play, right? But in that circumstance, I think that Craig Berube, would prefer to probably get his four lines going out there in the first 2 minutes, like get his lines jumping, get some hits, get the building going, and not be in a critical circumstance a minute into the game. Because when you don't score on that power play, and they only got a few chances, and Rass made a couple of nice stops, is that when you don't score there, now all of a sudden the crowd in St. Louis, they sit back in their seats a little bit.
Yeah.
And the Boston Bruins are feeling better about things. They've killed off a penalty, and now all of a sudden, emotionally, the game is even. And I think when you're a home team, you don't want the game to be, even emotionally that early. You want to get those four lines. You want some hits. You want the crowd going. You want to get some offensive chances. And that's the way you want to get there. You want the game to unfold in the first 5 or 10 minutes. And instead, the St. Louis Blues had a power play opportunity. They didn't score, and I think that evened the game out very early.
Let's talk about these goaltenders for a second, because you got Tuukka Rask, who I think got the inside track for the Conn Smythe, right? I think if Boston wins, he's probably the guy. This would be his first Stanley Cup as a starter. Of course, he backed up Tim Thomas when they won the Cup in 2011. I mean, how do you look upon him as the elite goaltenders in this league? Because he was a late bloomer, right? He didn't get a chance to be a full-time goaltender in this league until, what, the 13-14 season, basically, right? That was his first 30-win season.
Well,
he's been consistent since then.
Well, I mean, you got to remember, like, that Thomas had the injury issues in 09-10, and Rask got to play a lot. And Rask was actually the guy in the playoffs that year when the when the Flyers rallied from three games to none down and beat the Bruins.
Right.
So he played some then. He did not play a lot the next year. Thomas was off the charts, had a great year. They ended up going and winning the Stanley Cup, and Jim Thomas was superb. You know, and then after that, Tukaras started to be the guy. You get to the 2013 Stanley Cup final. He was the goaltender against, you know, the against the Blackhawks in that series. And he's been the guy since. And I think it's been a little bit of a love-hate relationship with the fans there. You know, the goaltender can be someone that can be a kind of a hot-button guy for fans. I think Rask has been excellent. I think he hasn't done in Boston what Tim Thomas did, which was basically backstop a run to the Stanley Cup final and win and bring home the Stanley Cup. Tim Thomas was able to win a couple of Game 7s. I think he won three Game 7s in that run to the Stanley Cup. So Tim Thomas was kind of a beloved figure. Rask has never kind of lived up quite to that level, but he has been very good and very consistent over the last several years. He's a Vezina Trophy winner. And I think watching him now, he is really, like most goalies, they mature over time. He settled in. The other night, David Perron tried to get in his kitchen. I mean, remember, Tukarask is a guy that used to get a little bit unhinged during some games. Even last year in the playoffs, remember, he threw his skate blade.
Oh, yeah.
When his skate blade came off in a game against the Tampa Bay Lightning, and he literally threw his skate blade. Think about that, you know, into the boards. And, I mean, that's like throwing a knife. I mean, so he's a guy that could – that I think in the past, teams probably feel you could rattle him. And I don't think he's been that guy this year, and particularly in this playoffs. And I think part of that is the Bruins went out and brought in Jaro Halak, who's a veteran guy. He played a lot during the season. Rask's workload was lessened. Halak was a real good veteran. And I think that, you know, Tuukka Rask is fresh right now, and I think he's matured as a player. And he's been terrific. The other night on that penalty I mentioned before, Donnie, on that early power play, The Blues didn't get a ton of chances, but part of that was that Rask made a couple of big saves and he held the puck, so there was no rebounds. He stopped Perron on a backhand from the slot, and then he stopped Vlade Tarasenko on a really good chance. He kind of fought it off and held on to it from the low left wing circle. So Rask made some timely saves there, and that's what he's been doing. And, you know, I think he's really has kind of taken his game up a notch, you know, in terms of his mental game this year.
No, it's interesting because the reason I brought it up is just because you think of the elite goaltenders in this league and the great goaltenders. You know, Rask is very rarely mentioned because, as you said, you know, he had his moment in 2013, but he didn't play 50 plus games until 13-14, and there's been some injuries, and Boston is looked upon. There's so many other players you think of before you think of the goaltender, right? I mean, there's so many great players on that Boston team, but this could be a guy that could have a Stanley Cup, a Conn Smythe on his resume here, and he's only two wins away from doing that. On the other side, you have Jordan Binnington, who, you know, it's got to be looked upon as one of the major reasons they made the turnaround from last to make the playoffs the way that they did and be three wins away. But I guess the question is this a flash in the pan? Is this a guy that's gotten the opportunity, is just riding high, or is this a goaltender that's going to emerge now and being a legit goaltender moving forward, and no matter how this series ends up going?
Yeah, I think, he's played really well for, you know, since coming on the scene in the NHL in January, right? And there's no reason to think that he will not continue to play well, because he's been pretty consistent. He's bounced back from bad games, and he's been really good. But that said, goaltending position is tricky in this sport. And we've seen over the years, Don, guys come in and play really well for a year, and then, you know, maybe not as good. And then they bounce, maybe they're up and down in their career. The guys who can be really consistently good, the Lundqvist, the Prices, the Rasks, the guys who are, you know, you can go through. Devin Dubnyk in Minnesota has been one of those guys that can be consistently good, that can be consistently right in that 915, 920 save percentage area or above year after year. They're unique. When I look at Binnington, you know, we're going to have to see more. He's going to have to do it over time, and that will be the determination. Yeah. He looks like he's got the right disposition. He's a competitive guy. He's been terrific for them over the last several months. So, you know, you see a lot of good things. There's one thing with him, Don, I do worry about, and it kind of flared up again the other night, is in between the in between whistles, I guess, or in a TV timeout, he came out and passed to grass and he kind of bumped him.
Yeah.
and he had some of the moments like that against Dallas in the second round with Bishop, and then with Jamie Benn got into it last year in Providence. You know, there was a little bit of a skirmish and he got involved with that. And, you know, that's what I was just saying about Tuukka Rask. Rask was someone that would get, you know, unnerved a little bit by things or try to create something, try to do more than just to stop the clock. And, so you just wonder about that part of his game. Is that going to settle out over time? And is he just going to focus on his job and not get involved with some of that other stuff and not be someone that people feel like they can knock him off his spot, so to speak, by getting into his kitchen physically? So that's the only thing I would say there. But I like what I've seen in these several months, but it's going to have to stand the test of time, and we'll see if he can do that.
Because the playoffs can be deceiving, right? I mean, you just mentioned Yaroslav Halak, who's backupping Rask, right? I mean, you go back to 2010, he was responsible for Montreal's run to the conference final, right? And since then, he's been with the Blues, with the Capitals, with the Islanders. Now he's with the Bruins to back up. He's really carved out a nice career for himself. But he's not anywhere close to an elite goaltender. But if I were to ask you when he was actually the better goaltender than Carey Price in 2010, hey, the sky's the limit for this kid. And he's made a nice career, but never really recaptured, you know, where you feel like this can be the guy that can lead you to the promised land. So it'll be interesting. Plus, you know, right now it's a nice story, right? This kid, part of the turnaround. And then if they win the Stanley Cup or even if they lose, it's like, okay, now what are you? Because Cinderella's now gone. Now, what can you do for us? Is this a flash in the pan, or is a lot expected? So the target's going to be kind of on his back. It'll be interesting to see what direction he goes.
The expectation level will rise, and now you're at phase two, right? And now we'll see how it reacts to that.
So you want some tweets?
Let's do it.
All right. Chris says, hi, guys. There's been a lot of talk about the physicality of the series. However, I think it's been somewhat overlooked that both teams reach the finals the way most teams do. Their best players have been their best players and great goaltending. Do you agree?
Well, both teams have obviously had very good goaltending. And you have to. How are you going to get through three rounds in the Stanley Cup playoffs with average or subpar goaltending? So that's always something that has to be at least very good. The top guys have performed well but I think that there's, I think all, both these teams are four line teams and they're three pair teams. So, I mean, I think that the 18 skaters, they've meshed really nicely. They've had big plays at the right times, timely moments in games. And I think that's how you get to the Stanley Cup final. And you have to have some good fortune. You don't have to have too many injuries. You have the right matchups. I mean, think of this. Boston has gotten to the Stanley Cup final, and they're two wins away from winning. They did not have to play the Tampa Bay Lightning because they were eliminated in the first round, didn't win a game. Tampa Bay, maybe they're a great matchup against Boston. Maybe they beat them. They knocked them out last year.
That's right.
They did not have to play the Washington Capitals, the defending champions, who were eliminated by Carolina. The Washington Capitals beat the Boston Bruins 6 days a week and twice on Sunday. And you look back at the matchups over the years, they really had their number. So sometimes you just have to have that good fortune of how things unfold. And, the Boston Bruins, they've had some tough opponents, there's no question. But by avoiding playing Tampa and Washington, those are things that help you. Those are things that work in your favor. So, your goalie has to be good. Your best players have to play well. I think your four lines and your defensemen all have to contribute. You have to stay healthy. And you have to, I think, have a good roadmap to get through.
But I would disagree with Chris in this aspect is that, how many big goals did Maroon scored? Or Jaden Schwartz, he has more goals in the postseason than he did in the regular season. How good has Corrali been in that whole fourth line for Boston? So there's been many different heroes. Everybody's had to play because you never know when the puck's going to be on your stick in the big moment.
That's right. And Corrali, you talked to Mike Babcock and that first series, seven-game series, Boston-Toronto, and Mike Babcock said that when Corrali entered the series halfway through, it changed the Boston Bruins team. So think about that, a fourth center that makes that kind of impact. So everybody has to contribute, and you have to have a lot of things go your way.
Jake asks, did Game 3 finally spark the Bruins' top line? If so, the Blues could be in big trouble.
Well, they connected on the power play, right? And that's what's been getting those guys going throughout this postseason. If you do the numbers on that line, over time. In the first three games of series, they're average or mediocre by their standards. In games 4 through 7, the numbers go way up. And I think the reason for that is those guys are really very smart, cerebral players, and they're excellent players. And I think they figure out ways to take advantage of their opponent over time in a series. So it's bad news for the Blues because these guys seemingly get better as the series goes on, and the Blues are going to have to figure out a way to stop that if they're going to get back in the series.
All right, Joseph says, is it coming down to the Blues just not being as good enough in this final rather than everybody saying it's all about the Blues taking lots of penalties? They remind me of Vegas last year. Great season, made it so far, but met the team that was clearly better.
Well, that may be the case. We'll see. I mean, tonight will be an indication for us, right? I mean, again, I go back to where we started. It's a game of chess, right? The Blues are making some changes now. They're making some adjustments. Are those adjustments going to be enough to change the side of things? We will see. I'm not so sure they are. The Western Conference this year, as we know, was not near as good as the Eastern Conference. That was well documented throughout the season. So, yeah, maybe Boston's just better. I mean, they look better when I watch them play, and they look like the better team. But, again, we've seen strange things happen in seven-game series. Tonight will be a big turning point. And you know, one other thing I wanted to mention, Donnie, is the guy that I've been really, really impressed with in this playoff run and in this final is Bruce Cassidy. I don't think this guy gets near enough attention for how smart and how sharp of a coach he is, and the coaching staff that they have there in Boston, and they have a great culture there, and they've brought in, oddly enough, they've got a couple of the devil influence there with Jay Pandolfo and on the bench, and Kevin Dean is in the coaching staff, and also Jamie Langerblum is part of their organization. So Bruce Cassidy, though, I think has been really, really a clever guy and a sharp guy, and he's gone through in this playoffs Mike Babcock, John Tortorella, and Roddy Brind'Amour, who was just red hot with his group there, and now he's taken on Craig Berube, has had a great run as well. So Bruce Cassidy, I don't think gets near enough attention for how sharp he has been in making moves to help his team move forward.
All right, one more off the beaten path here before I let you go. Michael, what are the chances that the Rangers make an aggressive move on Trouba?
I think there's a chance for that. I think the Winnipeg Jets are listening to offers for Jacob Trouba because they're not sure if they're going to be able to keep him down the road. I think he's really good. Right shot defenseman, can provide some offense, is really, really can be a physical player. I've always liked Jacob going back to when I saw him as part of the World Junior team in 2013 that won that gold medal for Team USA. But, I think you're going to have to trade something of significance to get him. And, I'm not so sure if the Rangers are ready to do that, but certainly he'd be a great addition to the Rangers group. I think he'd be a great addition to a lot of teams. I just think he's a real good defenseman.
All right, have fun in St. Louis and the rest of the way, and hopefully you're working for the next week.
One other thing. Are Devil fans not concerned about this report about Taylor Hall maybe not looking to sign an extension?
You know what? I was going to bring it up because somebody actually tweeted about that very thing. And asking the question, where would he end up being? It's kind of interesting. I don't know if that changes who they would pick first overall at all. I don't know if that factors into the draft. But what would your thought? I mean, he's been such a good player for them. Certainly hurt last year, but he was the single reason why they made the playoffs the year before. I can't really say I'm overly surprised by it, but I wonder what the plans would be. How would that affect the organization?
Very tricky circumstance for Ray Shero and the Devils right now, because normally the way I feel is that when players going into their last year don't want to sign an extension, I feel you should shop them and move them at the draft and get on with things, because you have more suitors at the draft. There's more teams that are they're remodeling their teams. You can get a bidding thing going between several teams. And I think that's your best chance to move a guy like that. Like, we saw it play out with John Tavares a couple of years ago, and he just left, and the Islanders had nothing, right? So they get cap space, I guess, when a player like that leaves, but they don't get anything in terms of a player coming back. This is a little bit of a problem, because Hall had the great year 2 years ago. Last year he was riddled with injuries, and now you're not sure of his medical if you're a team that's looking to maybe acquire him. So it makes the situation for Ray Shero a little more difficult. I don't know what exactly has gone on between the agent Darren Ferris, who's also the agent for Mitch Marner, and the Devils. But if indeed, I mean, the hypothetical for me, if indeed that Hall has said, listen, I'm not doing an extension, not interested in that, I'm going to play out the year and see where we're at, I think you really have to consider moving him, because you run the risk of him leaving and not getting anything in return. And if he plays well and you get to the trade deadline, yes, you can move him at the trade deadline, but the return for that is not going to be near as good as it might be now. And so, and we saw what happened with like a Mark Stone, for example. They were able to get a really quality prospect in Rundstrom out of Vegas, but that was because Stone signed. When you don't sign, like Duchesne did not sign with Columbus at that moment. The Ottawa Senators did not get the high-end package in return that they would have liked.
You're right. I mean,
so that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, you have to do it. You have to trade them, and you have to try to trade them at the draft. As you said, that opens the door for more teams. And if they were in a Columbus situation like with Panarin and Bobrovsky, and the Devils were close and thought, well, this guy's going to be motivated to play, we can benefit from it, maybe get into the playoffs, make a run, I don't think the Devils are that close. I mean, you know, he can have a 50-goal season, and what is that going to do for you? Just get bounced in the first round like they did the last time? He was the MVP, and you lasted five games with Tampa and got bounced out. I don't think you could afford to have that happen, so it's a shame. I don't know whether he just doesn't like New Jersey, thinks it's too long of a plan. I don't know what the deal is there.
Well,
but
he might want to just, you know, he might just feel like, listen, I'm coming off an injury-riddled year. My value will be higher if I go have a really good season and then go to market.
So it's not a big deal.
He may want to stay in New, but again, that's why I go back to the relationship between Ray Shero and Taylor Hall and the Devils and Taylor Hall. They know better than we do right here where this is. And it might simply be Taylor wants to play and up his numbers and have more leverage at the table, and maybe he would still want to stay in New Jersey. All indications were that he liked being in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. But I think Ray is going to have to – they are going to have to figure that out, because I think if they get the inkling that he really would like to maybe go somewhere else, I think then you have to really make a move to shop him and try to trade him.
No, that's probably the better thing to do. So it adds some intrigue. This is the team that's going to have the first overall pick and maybe make the biggest blockbuster trade of the draft. So all roads lead to New Jersey through Vancouver after the Stanley Cup final is over. Listen, if you see Joe Mick again, because I know you're spending a lot of time with him and having fun, ask him the Norm Green story. Very entertaining.
I will.
All right.
I will. He told a few good Glenn Sather stories. So might get a Norm Green story out of him.
And please, one of my highlights of my career is hanging out with you during the Stanley Cup final. So I missed it terribly. But you know what? I'm living vicariously through you. So send pictures, and I hope to talk to you next week when we got a champion, hopefully.
All right. Thanks, Donnie.
All right. That's the great E.J. Raddick. As always, joins us on Monday. Game four coming up tonight. And you hate to say must win, but really, can you wrap your mind around a St. Louis team winning three in a row against this Boston team and having home ice disadvantage to boot to make that happen? I think that'd be very difficult to believe. But as we mentioned, Bennington 12-2 in the playoffs, coming off a loss. So if they can get this thing even at two, we'll see what happens. But I think this is going to be almost must-win territory for St. Louis to be able to keep any kind of thought of them winning their first ever Stanley Cup. So it's NBC the rest of the way. We'll be back with you again tomorrow to recap Game 4. This was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York. And worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.